concept. It would seem, however, the more we grow in Christian life, that the more we learn ministry skills, become more knowledgeable of the Word, just get more experience, that that would lead to the tendency to think that we could do more things on our own rather than by God's grace. I can't really see that right now.
You are absolutely right. The question that's being asked is, in the area of growing spiritually, I said the more we grow, the greater we realize we're dependent on God's grace. The question is, what can happen, however, if in developing our skills, in developing our knowledge, in developing the techniques that we use and so forth, is it possible to begin to depend more on those than on the grace of God? And the answer is yes. It happens. I could give you case histories, not only of individuals, but organizations. You see, the navigators are not immune from this. And I say this to our leaders on all the occasions that I can. The fact that we have learned certain skills and have certain methods that we know have been proven has no guarantee that we will continue to experience the blessing of God if we begin to depend on those skills and those methods. There are organizations, and I will not name them, but there are organizations today that still exist that years ago were vital, dynamic, biblical, evangelistic, growing organizations. They learned certain skills. They began to depend on the skills. They're still around, but they're monuments now. They are enterprises. They are not the dynamic movement that God started with. That can happen. It can happen to an organization. It can happen to an individual. That is why I keep going back to that verse in Ecclesiastes, which says, an old and foolish king that will no longer be admonished. It stops learning. The minute I stop learning, the minute I think, I've got it all figured out on interpersonal relationships, I've blown it. I don't have it all figured out. I am working at these things. I am trying to learn them just like you are. And I have to keep putting them into practice. And every once in a while, somebody very kindly, though at the moment I don't think it's kind, but somebody very kindly says, but George, I heard you say in your interpersonal relationship, how come, if that's true, how come you're doing what you're doing? And I think, whoops, that's right. That's right. I said it, it's true, but I'm not doing it. So I better get with it. See? So it's a good question. It can happen, doesn't have to happen, but we need to guard against it continually. Thank you. Yes? What should be your response to someone who continually dumps but really doesn't seem to be looking for answers? Your response should be to lovingly tell them that. You should be willing to say to that person, you know, Joe, I'm aware of the fact that you've got a need, and I want to help you. But you keep talking about these same things. And we've talked about some of the things you can do to overcome it, but you don't seem to be willing to do that. Now, I don't think there's any value in our reviewing this over and over again. So I would appreciate it if we just don't discuss it anymore. That's the honest thing to do. Joe may not realize what he's doing. But what he's doing is he is manipulating you to try and get some pity. He's trying to find some kind of resource in you that keeps him from having to deal with the issue because he can keep talking about it without being faced with the fact that he's got to do something about it. See the difference? I have had to do that in counseling situations. After we have gone over a situation and I've explained it and the person understands it and they are unwilling to change, I say to them, look, there isn't any value in our continuing to meet. Because until you're willing to take the step and do what we've been talking about, we can't go on. Remember what I said, God leads us a step at a time. And until you're willing to take the first step, you can't take the second step. There's nothing wrong with that. That is being lovingly honest with that person. Hold them to accountability and responsibility. Do it lovingly. Make sure you've listened. Make sure you've communicated love. Make sure you've tried to help them. But if they keep doing it, be honest enough to point that out to them. Okay? Good. Yes?
Earlier, George, you mentioned that you were going to contrast compassion and pity.
Ah, all right.
Since we're on that now.
What do you see as the basic difference between compassion and pity?
Compassion has a lot of love.
Compassion has a lot of love. Can pity have a lot of love?
No, you just feel sorry for the person.
But it can be honest.
I'm glad you're not in those circumstances.
All right, now you're getting close to the difference.
Compassion has action. Pity just kind of looks on.
Good. To do something about it. Exactly. That's the difference. Pity, I can demonstrate love in feeling sorry for somebody, but I don't want to get involved. Compassion demands that I get involved at whatever level I can. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes there are situations that I see that I just know I'm not able to get involved in for whatever reasons. As much as I'd like to. And I may look on them with honest pity, but compassion requires my involvement. Jesus looked on the multitudes, it says in Matthew 9, he looked on the multitudes with compassion. And what did he do? He got involved. He got involved to the point of giving his life. That's the difference between compassion and pity. Feeling sorry for someone and getting involved to help that someone. Those two differences. Okay? Yes, please.
Is anger a sin?
All right, let's go back and review quickly what we said. Anger is an emotion. And an emotion in itself is not sin. An emotion is a temptation. I may feel like being impatient. I may feel like retaliating. I may feel like saying something sarcastic. I may feel like a lot of things. Those are temptations. There has no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above more than you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it. 1 Corinthians 10:13. So, the emotion is not a sin. That's why it says in Ephesians 4:26, when you are angry, that is, when you have that emotion, don't let it lead you to sin. Don't let the sin of anger express itself. The emotion is there, but it doesn't have to express itself. All right, how do I do that? Remember that little triad. Emotions respond. Intellect evaluates. My will chooses. I feel angry. I ask myself, is this pleasing to God? I say, no, it isn't. What should I do in its place? And then I make a choice. We always have to put something in its place. We can't leave it in a vacuum. So, jot down Ephesians 4:22 through 24. There's a three-step process here. Ephesians 4:22 through 24. 22 says, put aside that particular emotion, whatever it is. Put aside the old self. All right? That involves all of these things. Anger, petulance, self-pity, envy, jealousy, etc. First choice is, I recognize it. You see, I have to recognize it to put it aside. So I admit it. I recognize it. I am jealous. I'm feeling jealous. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling whatever. So I recognize it. But I make a decision. I am not going to let that control me. See, I put it aside. But what's the second step? Verse 23. And be renewed in the spirit of your mind. So, I have to come to a conclusion mentally. A new way of thinking. That old way wanted to give in to the emotion and express anger. But I've got to figure out a new way. Where do I figure it out? What the Bible has to say. I'm renewed by what the Scripture says. I have a new value system. And then the third thing says, put on the new self. A new way of behaving. Instead of anger, I'm going to show patience. Instead of jealousy, I'm going to let that person know I appreciate that quality in their life. Etc. You see, I take the negative and replace it with God's positive. I make a choice to put aside, to renew my way of thinking, and to put on another behavior, the behavior that is pleasing to God. That's how we deal with anger. Okay? Does that make sense?
So when you say you cannot express it, what if you're angry and someone looks at you and can tell that you're angry, but you don't respond to them in anger? What's the difference?
One thing that you can do, in order to be honest, is say, I am struggling with some personal feelings right now. I'm dealing with them. Just give me a minute. Be honest enough to admit it. First of all, you admit it to yourself, though. Then you admit it to God. And then, if necessary, you admit it to the individual. Now, very often, that's not necessary. If I'm driving in the car, and some meathead cuts in front... some other person... cuts in front of me, I have an emotional reaction, don't I? I feel like pulling out and pulling around in front of him and putting on my brakes, you know, and really messing things up. Now, I know you never feel that way, but I have felt that way. All right. Now, what do I have to do? Well, I have to first of all admit that to myself, admit it to God and confess it, but I don't have to admit it to that other guy. I mean, he doesn't even know that I'm struggling with that necessarily. So there are circumstances in which it requires admitting it to somebody. Sometimes it doesn't. Okay? Yes?
You mentioned that our relationship with God influences a lot of how we deal or relate to other people, the relationship we have with them. Mm-hmm. How much do our relationship with people influence our walk with God? I mean, if I have a beef with somebody, I have a tendency to think that I can maintain my relationship with God, but there seems to be a deteriorating effect on the relationship with God if I'm not right with people.
Okay. If I'm not right, if I haven't taken the steps that I need to take.
Is it vice versa, though? Is it the same?
Yes. If I am not obedient in my dealing with an individual, that's what Matthew 5 is saying. Leave your gift at the altar. In other words, your offering isn't that acceptable to God until you go and reconcile yourself with that person. So in a sense, what he's saying is the fellowship with God that you want to have by bringing that offering is really not acceptable until you go and get that thing taken care of. So the relationships work both ways. My relationship with God affects my relationship with people. And if I'm obeying God in my relationship with people, it will affect and enhance my relationship with God. Or the negative is just as true. Right. Let's see, over here.
You mentioned in 1 Thessalonians 5, 14, 3 needs and 2 different approaches.
Yes.
And, sometimes you cannot differentiate between the first two, rebellion
Mm-hmm.
And my approach is then first try to encourage and mold it. And if that doesn't work, focus on the
Okay, the question is, in 1 Thessalonians 5:14, how can you distinguish between the first, the unruly or the insubordinate, and the second, the faint-hearted? Sometimes it's difficult to make that distinction. It seems to me that that distinction is much easier than the distinction between the timid and the weak. You see, the insubordinate, the unruly, is being disobedient. And there are evidences of that. They are unwilling to accept the guidelines that God has established. They are unwilling to function on the basis of what God has said. That's that person. If we're not sure that that is the case, then what you're saying is absolutely right. We need to probe and find out. And that's where confronting them with what the Scripture says is important, because their reaction, their response, will let me know if they're being disobedient or if they're simply being timid because they don't know what to do. But they need to be confronted with the truth. That helps distinguish and differentiate where they are.
Yeah, it's difficult to see. Are you not taking God's will to yourself, or are you able to grasp it? So
I see what you're saying. The difference that there might be in believing God and open disobedience. And I think there is a very real distinction there. A lack of faith, while in a sense it is disobedience, it is not insubordination. See, again, let me explain. The word that's used here is very strong. It means a deliberate defiance of what I know I should do. A person who is struggling with self-esteem, let's say, may have an idea, but it may not be in defiance that they're not believing that. It's just that they don't know how to believe it. And there is a difference in their attitude. Okay? Good. Thank you for the question. That's good. Yes?
Before we were talking about honesty, how honest we should be, talking about speaking the truth in love and making sure that what you say will help somebody else grow, how do you determine, maybe many things you could say to somebody that could help them grow, how do you determine what they're ready to hear?
All right. Now we go back to the little statement I made just a few moments ago, and that is that you build a bridge of relationship that is strong enough to bear the weight of truth, number one. Now, in building that bridge of relationship, I take the time to try to find out what that person learned, what they need to learn, where they are in their growth, and therefore what it is I might be able to point out to them at this stage in their development. But that goes as, that is part of the establishing and developing of the relationship. As we relate to that person, we begin to look and see areas in which we might be able to help them, as well as areas of strength that we can encourage and enhance. And I think all of that goes into determining what and how soon I share with that person. But it's in how well I get to know them. That's why the relationship is so important if it is going to be a developmental experience. If someone comes into my office for a counseling session and I don't know them very well, and they begin to express some things, I might have some thoughts as to what I think is underneath and what they really need to deal with. But if I move too quickly, too deeply, what it's going to communicate is I haven't really listened to them, I haven't understood, I haven't been able to empathize with what they're struggling with. I come up with that answer. I may be absolutely right, but the timing may be completely wrong. That's where we need what I called earlier and asked for prayer about: discernment and wisdom. Now, God promises to give those things. And that's essential in the area of relationships, even close relationships, even after we've developed that kind of relationship with a person, to be sensitive enough to try and allow the Spirit of God to show me, should I say this at this point to that person? Is it important enough? Is it necessary? Or is it better to reserve that for another opportunity, another situation, when it might fit better? Does that speak to your question at all? Good. Thanks. Yes?
What's the balance between, say, you want to have one of these deep relationships with somebody, what's the balance between seeking somebody out that you admire and openly saying, you know, I'd like to be able to, you know, get close to you or get to know you a lot better, or we can share more intimately, or do you just kind of drift and let God, you know, lead you to that person? Let him, as it were, get your soul, if he is like Jonathan David, or do you take initiative, do you work at it, or do you just kind of let God do
something? The question is, what do I do in trying to find a person with whom I can relate at a deep level? Do I pursue it? Do I take the initiative? How do I go about that? First of all, I let the Lord know that I want that kind of relationship, that I need it. I want an accountable relationship with somebody. I may not know who at the present time, but I want it. Secondly, I ask the Lord to put me in contact with possibilities. Now, I may be in contact with them already. Third, I take the initiative, not in asking that person for that kind of relationship, but in opening my life to that person. One of the initial steps in developing a deeper relationship with anybody is the initial step of opening my life. You see, if I want them to respond to me in like manner, I have to be willing to open my life. So I start that way. I may or may not get a response from that person. I've done that. I'm speaking from experience. I've done that in a number of situations. And sometimes it's a most unexpected person that turns and responds to you and with whom you find a real heart rapport. And then at that point, without pursuing it by making some direct statement, you simply begin to interact. And it may come to the point where you say to one another, you know, this is really what I need. And if this is what God lays on your heart, I'd really enjoy having this kind of an accountable relationship with you. But you don't do that at the beginning. You take your time. Now, so the combination is, number one, you pray. Number two, you make yourself available by seeking people out and quietly, not opening your whole life, but, you know, something, just sharing a little something that you're experiencing or something you need or something that God is doing to see what kind of response you get. It's kind of testing the water. And then as you pray, God shows you, opens up a given situation, and you can begin developing that. I think that's about the best way I know. If you make it too structured, you lose the dynamic, spontaneity of what is required in that kind of relationship. That's one of the reasons I feel we need to be very careful that we don't structure man-to-man time and say, okay, I want you to spend time with him on a man-to-man basis. See, I mean, some things can happen there, but it may not be what you want to happen. You know? So, those are just suggestions I'm making. All right? I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes here or on a procedure that is being followed somewhere that I don't know about. Apparently I did. All right. All right. One more and we're finished.
George, earlier you mentioned that no one can make anyone else feel anything. As an example, how would you respond to the statement, you make me feel inadequate? How would you respond to that? How would you react to that?
I'll explain. Just recently I had an experience myself on that basis. Not feeling inadequate, but another set of feelings. And I said to this person, when you do that, you make me feel less and so. And this person very graciously said, but you say in your seminars, and they were right. See, the facts are, a person can say a lot of things to me that they want that could make me feel, if I allowed it to, inadequate. Somebody could come up to me after this seminar and say, you know, the way you handle that material really is not very good. You don't seem to know what you want to say. You don't have it organized very well. You don't communicate well. You know, all those nice things that they could say. Many of them would be true. Now, okay, so I say to that person, well, thanks, I appreciate your expressing that, and I'll try and do better the next time. But I don't have to feel inadequate, even though they may think I'm inadequate. See, I make that choice. Why? Well, first of all, I've been here as a servant of God, and I've been doing the best I can for the glory of God. Maybe I don't do it very well, but God gave me the opportunity, so He's going to pick up the pieces. He always does. No matter how well I prepare, no matter how hard I try, I have to continually go back to the fact that I am inadequate, and only God's grace makes anything fly. So, they say I'm inadequate. I say, you're right. You're right. But I'll keep learning. I'll keep working at it. But I don't have to go around with a heavy burden feeling, I blew it again. Oh, I did a terrible job. Oh, you know, whatever. See, I have that choice. That's why I say, no one can make us feel. Anyway, they may produce the stimulus that could cause me to choose to feel a certain way, but I can choose not to feel that way either. You see the difference?